to another exciting episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer, and our guest host today, the perfect guest host because of our special guest, is Enquirer entertainment editor Rasputin Todd, and the person on our staff who completed on marathon weekend the three-way with extra cheese.
Extra cheese.
Welcome, Rasputin.
thank you.
And congrats on your achievement. When did you decide? Did you wake up one day and say, you know what? It's not good enough to do one marathon event. I'm going to do three of them and toss in some extra cheese. And explain what that is for the people who might not be aware.
Well, to explain what it is, the three-way with extra cheese is on Friday, you do the 50 West. Well, the extra cheese is the 50 West mile on Friday at night. And then you wake up and you do a 10K and a 5K on Saturday. And then you try to rest. And then you do the half marathon on Sunday. And the reason that I signed up for this thing is because I finished my first ever half marathon last year, and I saw someone with a million medals on their neck, and I said, I want to do that. I want to hang those on my wall.
You want to look like Mark Spitz or Michael Phelps with all your medals.
Getting a lot of Mr. T today.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. For the benefit of our listeners, that wasn't just a sound effect that producer Phil dropped in. You are wearing four medals.
Six. If you want to count, like, because we got the 50 West Mile, we got the 10K, the 5K, the actual half marathon, and then you get another one just for finishing all of those together, and then the extra cheese little dingle on there.
That's amazing. Well, like I said, you're the perfect guest host today because our special guest is Doug Olberding, the CEO of Pigworks, which is the organization that is kind of the umbrella for the Flying Pig and all the other, I think they have about 10 events all said and done. And we are just coming off of marathon weekend, so I thought Doug would be a great guest. We can talk to him about how it went. I'm curious to find out, you know, what does the CEO of a marathon actually do? So are your questions ready, Rasputin? All right. Very, very good. So let's tell our listeners a little bit about you. Before you got serious about running, you were a smoker. You weren't too active.
Outed.
Oh, I mean, you were one of those guys that, you know, we got a couple smokers in the office that have to like go outside or go to the parking garage or whatever. Not to mention any names, Jason Hoffman. But so you stopped smoking.
Yeah.
Took up running.
Yeah.
And COVID. I remember,
it was COVID.
What's that?
It was COVID when I decided, you know, I wasn't coming to the office anymore, and I was sitting on my butt all day, and I was like, what the heck am I going to do? And I said, okay, I'm just going to go run instead of smoke. And
well, so I remember because you chronicled your early efforts to become a runner on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I remember I don't think I'm exaggerating here. Like, you were celebrating on Facebook, like completing a mile.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I did it. I ran a mile
without stopping.
Without stopping. And it was like, you know, and I run a little bit. And then you were celebrating. Like, I got my first mile under 12 minutes or something like that. You have come a long way. Like, from that humble beginning to clocking, you know, two half marathons, and now you have your sights set on the full marathon next year?
Yes. And the key thing about
what's this, your tip? Yeah.
The key thing that happened this weekend was I was supposed to go slow. I was supposed to save my body and go easy just so I can finish this three-way challenge. And the morning came on Saturday, and I PR'd, personal record, I PR'd the 10K. And
you
I
PR'd?
Said, yes.
Okay.
So
personal record.
Personal record.
Not P-hard.
No, correct.
Because that runners like to do that, too, if they overhydrate.
Yes, yeah. You smell it all around.
That's, yeah. Who needs the porta potties, especially if you're a guy? You just stop on the course and
yes.
take so, care. So you didn't pee hard, you PR'd.
I PR'd.
Okay.
PB'd, personal best, all whatever right. you want to call it. And I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to wake up and I'm not going to feel well tomorrow. I ate some pasta and then I woke up and actually PR'd the half marathon as well. And while doing that, beat my Saturday time on the 10K. So during the half marathon, I PR'd the 10K as well. So I don't know, man. When you get out there and you're racing against people, like people say, like, oh, it's the competitive nature in you. It's that dog in you. And I think it's because I'm a little claustrophobic and I'm just, there's so many dang people that I'm just like looking for the next opening. I'm just constantly chasing myself.
That is true. I mean, whether it's the pig or the Thanksgiving Day run, some of these runs that draw a lot of people, unless you're lined up in the front because, you know, you're an elite runner or whatever, mm-hmm. the first mile or so, you are dodging in and out of people trying to find some yes. space to run. I get that. But you got to admit, because, you know, I'm the same way. I'm like, okay, I need to run my race. I know what my pace should be. But you get out there and you're running with people and there's people along the course cheering you on. There's like bands. You got to fight the urge to go out too fast. Yep. So you have some gas left in the tank at the end. So that's pretty typical. But what an inspiration you are, all kidding aside, because I do kid you a lot. Way to go, man.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. So with that setup, with that amazing setup, let's bring in the CEO of Pigworks, the Flying Pig Marathon, Doug Olberding. It is special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and we have with us the man who probably would rather be catching up on sleep right now, and that is the CEO of Pigworks, which you know as the overarching organization for the Flying Pig Marathon, Doug Olberding. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Long, energetic, fun 10 days.
So I want to start out with probably what might be an obvious question, but what does the CEO of a organization that puts a marathon together, like what's a day in your life? Like,
well, it depends on what time of year it is. A day in the life during a marathon weekend is a day of waking up usually very early. Marathon morning, I think I was on site at Paul Brown Stadium around 3 or 3:15 in the morning. Being on my feet literally the entire day. And not just walking or standing, sometimes running. Sometimes jogging, sometimes crawling, maybe, but till 6:30. But I'll tell you what, I don't know. It's not adrenaline. It's not adrenaline that keeps you going on those days. It's just the excitement and the emotion and just the stories and the people. It's just an incredible, incredible experience. I can't describe it. It's really hard to describe.
So let's go now, like day in the life of Marathon Day. You said you were out on the course at you know, about 3 a.m.
Yeah.
The race starts, the marathon starts at 6:30. That's early. I have to imagine that there are so many moving parts, you don't even know like where to be.
That's true. I've been, obviously involved with the marathon since 2002. On the board. And for a good part of that time, I play in a band and our band would play the start. You know, we had a stage erected at the start and we would play. And so on those days, then I would get there at 3 o'clock in the morning because we had to set the stage up and sound check and be ready for the runners. But,
what was the name of the band?
At that time, the name of the band was The Code. And The Code. It was fun. We had it was like 10 pieces. Sometimes we had a horn section. We had keyboards, two guitar players, a group of female backup singers. We did it was a fun experience, but that was, 3 o'clock in the morning back then too.
I don't think I knew that, in my Doug Olberding research before this podcast, that you were not just in a band, but your band played at the beginning of the, what years would that have been?
Oh, about? Let's see here. I'm going to say it started with, I'm going to say it was in the 2000 and probably 3, 4, 5 range, okay. that we started playing first at the pasta party. They wanted a band at the pasta party. They wanted to really blow it up. And so we came in and we just did this show. It was awesome. Then it went to the pasta party on Friday or on Saturday to a pre-event party when we would have that on Fountain Square. So we'd play on stage on Fountain Square on Friday night, do the pasta party Saturday. Then we started playing at the start line. So we were playing 3 consecutive nights. And that probably went until 2018, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. My mind is blown right now. There's a pasta party. Like, I threw my own pasta party at Skyline.
Well, I will tell you that we might be bringing back the pasta party. The pasta party sort of went away with the pandemic.
Yeah.
So it may be something that we bring back, but we didn't have it this year. We're looking at that. We're talking about it yesterday, actually. So yeah, it could come back.
So you're a marathon runner as well, obviously because of your band duties that you weren't able to just like set the guitar down or whatever. What's your instrument?
Guitar.
Okay. Yeah. And run the race. So how many pigs have you run?
Well, I have run a total of 0.
That's good bar trivia right there. How many Flying Pig Marathons is the CEO run?
Well, I did the first 2 years. I did the last leg of the 4-person relay whenever we started that. It wasn't the first year. It was probably the second year and the third year. The Reggae Run, that organization was operating the water stop in Hyde Park Square. And so I would go there. And then when the last runner came through, I could get on my bike. And at that point, the last relay zone was right by Music Hall. And so by the Free Store Food Bank. So I would get on my bike and haul down there, lock my bike up, get the exchange and run the last leg. This year, I was so honored and overjoyed to run the Blue Jean Mile, which was a special sort of add-on to the 50 West Mile on Friday night.
That's for like suicide prevention,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, John Gregoric is one of our friends at ASICS. John was an Olympic class runner, American steeplechaser in the 80s. I think it was 80 and 84. He qualified for the Olympics. And his sons are runners too. And he lost his youngest son to suicide in 2019. And during the pandemic, his older son, Johnny, wanted to lift everybody's spirits. And he had heard about people trying to run, you know, a record in blue jeans, right, for the mile. And so he did this big thing, got pledges and everything like that. The world record for running a mile in blue jeans was 4:11, and Johnny Gregoric ran it in 4:06. So set the world record running the mile in blue jeans. And then they decided, wow, this could be something they could build off of. So when John Sr. Reached out to us, we had already opened registrations. Things were already happening. But we said, we're going to do this. We're going to build the plane while we're flying it. We're going to figure out how to make it happen. So we did. We just invited people. If you want to run in memory of somebody that you've lost or to support, teen mental health, show up at the Blue Jean Mile wearing blue jeans. So I ran with John Gregoric and
in blue jeans
in the rain.
Now
I love it.
There's so many heartwarming stories tied to the marathon. We'll get into that in a little bit. Not a logistical question, but more of a tactical question with the blue jean run. Mm-hmm. I mean, not all blue jeans are created equal. They have relaxed fit. They have some with like some spandex, mm-hmm. you know, stretchy waistbands and all mm-hmm. that stuff. Then they have like the hardcore 501. You got to wash them 100 times before they stop getting stiff. What was your... what did you select for your blue jean run?
I have lots of blue jeans. I was looking for loose fit.
An important tip, right?
You know, a boot cut. I was going for a boot cut. And so I had, mine were actually Old Navy blue jeans, were the ones that really felt like I could run in. I tried a couple of them on. When I put those on, I thought, oh, these are, you know, they weren't sort of tight around the waist. They were loose. I had to wear a belt, but but it was good. You know, I didn't think I would would want to run in something really, really tight. That just seems like it would be super uncomfortable.
Right.
And if ASICS drops out next year, you need to do like Body Glide or something, some anti-chafe.
Well, you know, I think ASICS is in this for the long haul. I thought maybe 25 or 30 people would show up, and we didn't count because we had no way to know. There were hundreds in that first corral. And while we were running down Mehring Way towards the finish line, he kept exclaiming, wow, there's got to be hundreds of people out here. This is so great. I mean, he was so happy. And it was just, we presented a check to 1 in 5. Nancy Eigel-Miller came to the finish line, and we made a donation of $5,000 to 1 in 5, which of course the organization that does that work here in Cincinnati.
One of the questions I've been dying to ask is, how many days before the marathon do you begin checking your weather app? And is weather one of the biggest like things out of your control that you worry about?
Yeah. Well, I think when we start really getting serious, because, you know, you look at that 10-day forecast on your phone and it's whatever it says today, 10 days, it's not going to be that.
Especially here.
So we have a meeting a little bit more than a week out, you know, two Wednesdays before the marathon, up at the regional, the ROC, the command center, and everybody's there. And we have on the call the National Weather Service. And we get, at that point, they start giving us daily updates. And on that Wednesday, I said, hey, you know, you might be in good shape. You know, this system's coming in, and I think it's going to move through by Thursday. It could move through by Thursday or Friday. And if that happens, you're going to have, it's going to be 38 degrees at the start, you know, clear skies, beautiful day. And of course, that system started moving, and then it just sort of stopped and was just spinning around on top of Cincinnati. And it was funny for me. I think I went to bed on Wednesday looking at my, or on Tuesday looking at my phone, and there was a sun on Sunday. And then I woke up on Wednesday and looked at it, and it was a cloud with rain. And it just pretty much stayed like that until race day. But you know what? We have been tested the last 2 years. We have an excellent emergency action plan that was crafted with our safety officials and our medical director. And we executed it. I thought we did a great job this year.
What was the plan? Like, what specifically did you execute because of weather?
So on Friday, you might remember, Friday we had the 50 West Mile was set to go off at 7 o'clock. About 6 o'clock, or a little bit before 6 o'clock, we had a meeting in the command station down on at the finish line, and we were looking at a system that was moving in and a couple cells with lightning, and they were tracking towards Cincinnati. We thought they might split around us or they could nick us, but we knew there was going to be lightning in the area. So at 6 o'clock, we announced that we were going to delay the start of the 50 West Mile. We have the ability to reach all of our registered athletes via text, via email, through our race app. So we messaged everybody and said, if you're at the starting line, find shelter, you know, and we'll make an announcement when the race is going to start.
And I can attest that worked, because we were huddled in the in Paycor Stadium and just like waiting for the 6:30 update. And so
that was
it reached us.
Yeah. And so then we said, we'll make an update on the start of the race. We knew that the system was going to clear. We knew that we would probably need about a half hour, not a half hour, probably, you know, 15, 20 minutes to reset the starting line to get the timing apparatus up. And we were ready to go. We started right at 7:30. So a half hour delay worked perfectly.
And I would imagine some wet weather, lightning, is probably less of a concern to you than hot.
Lightning's a concern.
lightning, you can alert everybody. Yeah. You can delay. Right. You can ride out the storm.
Right.
But if you're, you know, at the starting time of the marathon, if it's already 60 degrees and you know it's
98% humidity,
like last year. I'm guessing you can. Correct me if I'm wrong, that's more of a concern to the medical team.
It is more of a, you know, the medical, our medical operation this year compared to last year was, you know, last year, they were working.
Yeah.
They were working.
IVs for everyone.
Yeah, ice baths and everything like that. You know, we had some transports, but we didn't have anything on the scale of what we'd seen the last 2 years.
And transport's the inside lingo for we had to take people to the hospital.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. exactly. And most of them were not serious. They were, you know, these were not, you know.
So I imagine this year they were just chilling, playing cards.
They were standing out watching the finish. I mean, they were ready to go. Yeah. They were out on the course. They were doing everything they needed to do. It's just, you know, with the temperatures being as cool as they were and that nice misty rain that was falling most of the morning, you know, it kept the runners cool. You can probably attest. I had said at some point this is no excuses weather. You can't blame anything on the weather this year. It was, I would almost.
What about pruny toes?
What was that?
Pruny toes.
Come on,
man.
I, you know what? You wore the wrong socks.
Yeah, you need wicking socks.
All right.
All right. Let's go back to on race day. There are so many inspirational stories. Where do you like to be as the average, not the, you know, the elite, I'm breaking course records, which by the way, you had two course records broken in the half.
Yeah. And probably at about mile 20 or so in the marathon, we thought we might get two in the marathon. I was so excited. I was like, oh man, this would be so awesome if we had course records in the marathon and the half marathon. But then we saw at about 22 or 23, they were going to be off by a little bit.
Yeah.
But they were very good times.
Are you monitoring their chip in real time?
So we're getting communication from the bike team. So we have athletes, you know, bikers, you know, on our lead athletes. So we get some communication there. Plus we have a lead vehicle with cameras and everything like that. So we're getting reports, you know, on what's happening at the front of the pack. That little tracking system that we do, it's just estimating, you know, mm-hmm. it'll, you cross the line, it gets your time, and then it's estimating what it's going to take you to get to the next one. So if you start walking after you go over the last timing mat, it's going to say you finished, you know, in right. 5 minutes, but, you know, if you walk, it's going to be longer.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But, no, that was pretty exciting. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. So where do you like to be around the finish time of the average, like the Rasputin Todds of the world.
Yeah. I like to be at the finish line. I like to be at the finish line, and I will stand at the finish line because, you know, this year especially, I went out and ran with all the running groups. You know, all the people that train, I went around to 18 different groups starting in January just to run with them, you know, and to be with them. And if they were getting a beer afterwards, I go grab a beer with them.
So these are the official, like through the Flying Pig Marathon, you can sign up for a running group.
Well, no, this could have been, we just put something out on social media and said, hey, you want to run with the pig? Let us know when you meet. And so people just started messaging me.
Oh, I guess I'm thinking of pacing groups, groups.
You know, these were just people that were training on their own. So I was meeting with like really small neighborhood groups and organized training groups
and running with them.
And so then I had all these people that, you know, of course they knew me. I would go to a group and there'd be 80 people there. And of course I couldn't remember 80 people's name, but if I was at the finish line, people were coming up and hugging me, giving me high fives and telling me their story. So that's really cool. Plus when I go into the post-race party, I meet all those groups that are there, the Fleet Feet group, the Queen City Running group, the Tri-State group, and everything like that. And I'll tell you what, this year we set a record for the slowest marathon finish ever. The slowest marathon finish ever.
I didn't know you
What's
kept
the story?
Those records.
I'm sorry about that.
There's something I can strive for.
Well, I'll tell you the story. So normally what we do, we keep everything there until the last person crosses the line. And that's something that we're never going to take it down. We have a trail parade. And if you fall behind the trail parade, you can continue, but you have to go move the sidewalk because we've got to open the streets back up. And we also have a back of the pack support team. And these are these women who join the race at about 16 or 17 miles. And they stay with those people who are, you know, have fallen behind, right? And they've got support. They've got, you know, Band-Aids and Vaseline and food. And we resupply them with the vehicle if we need it. And there was a gentleman that had fallen pretty far behind. And he was moving very slowly. He did his last mile in 40 minutes, 4-0, 40 minutes. And, you know, you get a little anxious at the end. You know, we've got all these burly, you know, roadies, you know, driving forklift trucks, taking things apart. You know, people need to get back. You know, they've been there all day. And, you know, we said, we're going to stay. At one point I said to everybody that had been there, I said, look, if you feel like you're done for the day and you want to go home, you can go. You know, if you feel like you're done, go. I think two people left. And we had this group of our interns. I told the interns, you guys don't have to stay. And they were like, no, we want to see this guy. We want to see him. And so the forklift trucks all drove around and they're like sort of sitting around the finish line. And Iris is there and I'm there and all the interns there and our ops team is there. And these three women are almost carrying this guy to the finish line. About 10 yards from the finish line, they let go of him. And he hobbles across the finish line, and we just erupt in cheers. I mean, you would the interns and everybody, they were, and I turned around, and this big burly guy that was sitting on a forklift truck was crying, and he came up to Iris.
I'm getting choked up now.
Iris said he said he'd never seen anything like this. He goes, that's why I come back and do this every single year. It was amazing. Our medical director got this man to the side, checked him out and everything like that, made sure he was okay. His wife was with him walking across the end. And then we had cleared everything out, so we didn't have any wheelchairs. So I told you that sometimes I'm running, walking, crawling. This was a time when I ran. I ran from the finish line back to the ops area and grabbed the golf cart and drove back because they were parked on Third and Race right down the corner from where you guys are. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally right there. And so I got he and his wife into the car and I drove them to their car and got them in and everything like that. So talk about that. That's emotional. I mean, was he finished in like 10 hours and 5 minutes. 10 hours and five
so
minutes.
So that was 6 o'clock or something.
It was very late.
4 o'clock.
Three o'clock? Yeah, I think our previous record was 9 hours and 43 minutes. So he beat it pretty good.
All right.
Well, not something to aspire to.
I was going to say, not that we're advocating someone to aspire to that, but you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here. I bet there are not too many marathons in the country that you would see something like that. That might be pretty unique to Cincinnati and the Flying Pig.
The comment that I get all the time, and if you look on social media and see what people are saying, they're saying, I can't believe the course support. I can't believe, you know, what's out there. I can't believe the cheering.
The energy. That's the word I see.
Yeah, you know it. You know it. Don't you see it? And this is like what I feel like that the marathon, like I said this in an interview with the Enquirer a little bit ago. You know, we don't own this race. This race belongs to everybody in Cincinnati. It is a public good. We are stewards of this event. And, you know, our job is to protect it, to protect the brand, to grow the event, and to really honor and reward the emotions of our participants, our spectators, our partners. And if you go into it with that mindset, right, then you're going to do that. You're going to have people at the finish line to take care of those people that are coming in at the very end in 9 or 10 hours. You're going to make sure that there's bacon on the course. You're going to make sure that those medals, right? Those are chunky medals. I was at the New York City Marathon this fall. I saw their medal. Our medal blows theirs away. And I love everybody at New York.
It was basically like a quarter.
It was nice. It was a nice medal. But
these things are hefty.
Rasputin, jingle those for the microphone, would you? There you go.
Those are
heavy ass medals.
You know, turn it around. Look at the backside of any.
They have pig butts.
You got pig butts on them, right? Look, a big old pig butt
faces,
on the back.
Pig butts.
Yeah.
I love them.
They're really, and people love it. People love that. And that's what I mean by, you know, really sort of leaning into the pig stuff and you know, making sure that people are happy when they get here and they tell the story of Cincinnati when they leave.
Well, I can't think of a better way to end our conversation. Although I did want to give Rasputin who is, as we said, the he completed the challenge known as the three-way with extra cheese.
Yes.
So you ran basically four pig events.
Yes.
This year.
23-point-something miles in total.
So here's your opportunity. Not every participant has the opportunity with the CEO of the marathon right across the table from them to give your feedback. You participated in four events. What do you have in terms of like feedback for the CEO of the Flying Pig Marathon?
Well, when you asked me to come here, I was to have this little chat. The first thing that popped in my mind was what choked me up. Because my first half was last year, excuse me, and I cried when I finished because I was my first. And I was expecting to do that at the end of this one, you know, like the most trying thing I've ever done. I was expecting to cry at the end. But what choked me up this time was while I was running, every single time we passed a police officer that was on the course, just like manning the course, and watch it, someone said thank you. And in the light of current events, it choked me up every single time there was a thank you. There was a thank you. And I didn't get it at first. And then like every time we passed one, it was just more and more. And it was heavy. So, and then the other choky moment was we were on a bridge and there was an older gentleman just watching everybody go by and he was just crying. I had no idea why. Like, did he used to run and he can't anymore? And, you know, this is the first one he hasn't done. Did he lose someone that did? Did somebody just pass him that he was cheering on? I don't know. But I thought about that for about a mile. Was just that guy and the pride and how much this means to so many dang people. And that's what I wanted to say to you.
It is a little spiritual. Isn't it spiritual? I mean, I don't want to just kick that term around, but you know, those are the kind of stories that I hear all the time.
Yeah.
And it's so, it makes doing this work. It's very good work. It is hard work. It is hard work putting on 10 events, in the span of 3 days on top of a 7-day expo is really hard work. Yep. But it sure is good. It is rewarding. And, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else right now. Yeah.
My only other question is, where can I get one of those cool hats?
Oh, yeah. You can get them on our e-store. Go to our e-store.
All right.
Oh, people love this hat. It is so cool. Right. Yeah.
I hope they come in flat bill. I hope they come in flat bill.
You can't see it at home, but it's got our course in a graphic form and then all of the five cities that we run through below it. It's a pretty neat looking hat.
Well, good. You guys have the best swag.
Oh, I know.
I mean, many choices for the swag.
We are aware of our swagger.
All right. Well, Doug Olberding, thank you for your time. Like I said, we're very grateful because after landing the Flying Pig yet again on a Wednesday morning, you're talking to us instead of like relaxing, sleeping in, or doing what, you know, whatever you do to recharge your batteries. You look like the person who doesn't really need to recharge that much, though. The energy, like, you just have this energy that I can't describe. We should have video rolling, Phil. you don't look like you were a guy that put on one of the biggest running events in the country.
Well, I don't know. I think it's because I'm a runner, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's like I'm self-actualized right now. I ran here today. I parked way over at the Eggleston lot and did a run through the park and sort of looped around and timed it. So I got here about 15 minutes early. So I'm
about 20 minutes early because he called me and I'm still driving here. And he's like, I'm a little bit early. I'm like, yeah, about 20 minutes early the day after election, but that's okay.
Yeah.
We're and he glad. Smells fine.
Oh, I made sure of that. Thank you, P&G for Febreze. I have a big bottle of it in my truck.
Awesome. Well, Doug, thank you for being here and congrats on another successful marathon weekend.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Well, I could have talked to Doug probably for twice the amount of time that we did. He's, he really captures how special the marathon is here.
He's just an excited guy.
Oh yeah. Like, so after we were done recording, he told me he was walking out that he's still on this like emotional high. Like, mm-hmm. It's just, you know, but yeah, I know people don't take it for granted, but if anyone does, having participated as a runner and coming down and cheering other runners on and being at other running events, you know, across the country, not a lot, but a few, it is a special thing we have going on here with the amount of people that come out on the course and cheer people on. Every mile, there's something happening. You know, the we didn't even get into it with Doug, but the army of volunteers that come out, official volunteers and others, just kind of come out and help people out. I remember one of the races I ran, somebody, I think it was in the Hyde Park area, had affixed to a tree outside of his house a board slathered with Vaseline.
Thank you, kind soul.
I wonder if that guy still does that. You know, everybody has to do their part, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's important to help people prevent the chafe or, you know, bloody nips or whatever you use your Vaseline for. Rasputin, I have to ask you, since we're at the That's So Cincinnati moment of the podcast, the segment where we reflect on things like that. The whole marathon is a That's So Cincinnati thing. Yes. Do you have any other experiences from your weekend you'd like to share?
Yeah. I mean, when I finished the half last year, my whole family signed up to do the 5K together this year. So my mom signed up, my wife signed up, my sister and her whole family signed up, and we were all excited about it. And then coming up to race weekend, my mom said, well, I'm not really feeling like leaving my house this weekend. So my mom dropped out. And then we all met up after I finished my 10K on Saturday and, you know, met up with my wife and my sister and their fam.
So the 10K's first.
That's 10K's the early first. Run. Yeah. Yes. And then
that steps off when?
7 a.m.
Okay.
And then I sat there in front of the Black Music Hall of Fame and tried to coordinate how to get five individuals in the same space of thousands and thousands of people.
Find so that me you guys here, could find run me together. Here,
so we could run together. Mm-hmm. And I decided, because I was feeling a little competitive and I had just PR'd the 10K, I said, instead of walking, I think I'm going to run the 5K. So I left them behind. And I felt bad about it the whole time.
Okay. So I could be judgy right now and say, Rasputin, really? This was about family bonding. You guys could have all walked together.
Yep.
And you decided you had to go out and run hard and left them behind, right? Yes. I can't be judgy because a few years ago, my wife and I don't think she was even my wife back then. Lauren and I decided to run the Thanksgiving Day race. And she assumed that we were going to run together, right? and a lot of families do for Thanksgiving. Like, not a lot of people take that race super seriously.
Yeah.
So we start off, right? And she's just taking her time. And I think she saw a friend and stopped to say hi. And for the first mile, I'm just sort of like holding myself back. And then finally, I was like, screw it. I just took off running and left her. And she has not let me forget it since.
Good.
What a jackass I was.
Did you even say bye? Like, see ya.
I mean, she acted at the time like, go ahead, just go. Like, and yeah, I was like,
I'll catch
okay.
up. I'll catch right. up.
But, you know, just like, you know, those of us guys who are in relationships, when your significant other says, fine, just it's fine. It's anything but.
Yeah.
I mean,
careful,
right? we kind of laugh about it now, sort of. But she has not let me forget that. And so I hope your family is equally, you know.
I just blame my mom because she set the precedent because she didn't come.
She didn't come. Yeah. Just blame it on mom. Yeah. Oh, well.
Sorry, anyway. Mom. Love you, Mom.
Well, I think it's time to wrap this up, Rasputin. Shall we?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up, and long ago somebody left with the cup.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you. but he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns.
Thanks again, and see you next week.
Yes.